So welcome to everyone. I want to share a few ideas about how we can continue to develop our practice together. And from what I can understand, in Czech, you seem to use a very similar word to meditation for meditation. So I wonder if it has the same root in the language as it does in English, to meditate upon something. Seems to mean something a bit like think about it. Or in English, we can also say to reflect upon something. Yeah, so it means kind of an exploration of things and ideas. And I expect for the early translators, this felt like a very useful way of translating the word bhavana, which is the word used in the Pali by the Buddha. But this word is more related to the word cultivation. Like we have in agriculture, we cultivate plants. And so, to be kind of poetic, we plant intentions and we let them flower into experiences. That's great. So, the question for us in our meditations is, what are we cultivating? What are we growing? So, it's not just this reflection on our experience, we're maybe growing calmness. Or we might be growing kindness. And we can also grow focus, precision. Or we could actually reduce focus and just gather more spaciousness. And so the words that we use for all kinds of elements of our practice shape how it feels. That thing that we're going to do. So maybe the timetable would look a bit weird if from the first day it said sitting cultivation and walking cultivation. But by now I think we can accept that, yeah, we're pretty weird anyway. So maybe we'll change the timetable tomorrow. But at a certain point, it is helpful to think about meditation as cultivation. And so when we come in to start a meditation, it's really good to kind of start it well. You know, like we're starting a garden. Like we're starting to develop a garden, build a garden. So make that clear intention, like what is it I want to cultivate? And when I return back from maybe getting distracted or getting, you know, a great idea, is like, what was it that I wanted to cultivate with this time? And then, however I meet this moment, can that be a way of cultivating what really feels valuable? So, today's cultivation that I want to share with us might seem a bit negative at first. But the intention is actually cultivating even more freedom, even more kindness, even more space. So it's kind of a strange sound in my environment. Do you hear it? Is it? You don't hear it. That's very good. Okay. Well, it's with me and it's not reaching you, so that's good. Today we tried dropping in, saying this is a Nietzsche. And we mentioned that this is saying something useful more than it is saying something true. And when we ask if this is a useful way of looking, it means is it helpful in helping us to feel more free? Does it support me to feel more joyful, more connected? More harmonious, more spirited, more heartful. We're just starting out. I'm going to use even more words that don't really exist. Yeah. So, what makes these ways of looking useful is that they're insightful. And the insightfulness is that expression of bringing a bit more freedom. And so we want to know it in that feeling. Does it feel useful? Yeah, so insights are what support freedom, and we want to feel that sense of freedom to know it's useful. So I'm kind of just going to name it here that maybe some parts of so some aspects of this talk might seem kind of anti-life, anti-things, like rejection, that kind of feeling. And I hope it doesn't feel like that, but it could. So the second characteristic that the Buddha invited us to pay attention to is just called dukkha. And the way that he would introduce these insights is he would say, Sabbe sankhara anicca. Which we could say, well, literally it means, sabbe means all. Sankhara is actually the word for fabrication, that it's everything, all fabrications. We could also, you may also hear it called conditioned things, things which rely on the conditions of other things for them to be there. Another way we could say it is appearances. So all appearances, all phenomena. So sabbe sankhara anicca is all conditioned appearances are inconstant. And then the next one is sabbe sankhara dukkha. All conditioned appearances are distressing. Now, that might sound quite rejective in a way, like it's kind of, yeah, nothing's good enough. Everything's distressing. So I'm going to take a moment to repeat myself. It's more important that this is useful than that it's true. Going to repeat myself again from even earlier. We talked about four types of happiness, or three or four types of happiness, going down from excitement to deep peace. So if you're feeling like deep peace, where there's almost no conditioned appearances, or maybe there are no conditioned appearances at all, and then you kind of look back, then maybe you'd say it's distressing. Okay, is this making sense so far? So I'm not saying, do you think it's true, obviously. I'm just saying, is what I've said so far, does that actually make sense? Okay. So, sabbe sankhara dukkha. A way of looking at this statement is that it's actually an extension of sabbe sankhara anicca. Human beings, like us, we like to be happy, yeah? We like to feel in harmony with the beings that are around us, like to feel peaceful. And we like to have kind of reliable relationships, reliable experiences. When Adam invites us to come to the Zen Center and sends a picture, and we turn up and it's not anything like that, we don't feel that Adam's very reliable. As I understand it, we actually like things to be reliable. If everything is anicca, it can't be reliable. And, you know, if we go to some effort, we want lasting happiness. If we make some effort into getting things, organizing our existence, we want lasting happiness. And then for that, we need something that's reliable for lasting happiness. And so if seeing that things aren't able to bring lasting happiness because they just don't last, then maybe we would let go in relationship to them. And then we see that a more lasting happiness is possible because of the way that we relate to them. So we're looking at things, so all of these conditioned appearances, and we're saying these are not reliable for lasting happiness. So we're looking at life through a lens that sees the dukkha and encourages us not to seek happiness in things. Something nice appears, we let go rather than try and pull it towards us. We let in and are more intimate with those things we might normally push away. And then in that way, we also let in the subtler things of life that we're more kind of inclined to overlook. So you see here, we're talking about Vedana. And so in a sense, you know, it's just more of the same practice. We're just developing ways of looking at our experience that support the lessening of dukkha. So we're just building on this same idea, developing this same idea. And in a sense, it's supported by developing meditative steadiness of calmness that develops through the. So before we were looking for the Vedana and to understand that urge to pull towards or push away and just lessening that. And obviously, we could do this for much more than just a day or a couple of days. So just to say, yeah, we could definitely keep developing that a lot more, and probably we should. And right now we're in the middle of still developing and exploring this practice of anicca. In this moment, we can just drop that way of looking in. Ah, this, anything that seems permanent is not permanent. Anything that seems constant, seems fixed, cannot be. And I feel it just as I'm saying this, something's softening. I feel like I'm getting closer to the experience and kind of a deeper dimension of it is being revealed. Yeah, or you could say another way, something's being let go of. And so Vedana to anicca, and now then to dukkha. You know, we're kind of just developing the same subtilization, same path of practice. But we can see, you can follow on to this next practice, or you can keep developing other ones. When we come back and, you know, busy mind, and we practice intimacy counting and we steady the heart and mind in this present moment, we're releasing. Especially if we enjoy that steadiness of heart and mind, let it touch us. And the same when we enjoy the subtler, deeper, more enjoyable way of breathing. Or when we can open that field of awareness to more and more space and silence, and everything is allowed to arise and pass. Or when we bring metta in the evening meditation, developing this quality of kindness, loving kindness. These are all not dukkha making. So we said before that insight, when it's working for us, we feel it. We feel a bit more freedom. And it's helpful to remember that the dukkha is expressed as tension in the body, tightness in the heart and mind. All the meditation techniques I've ever heard about work on that principle to some extent. They open what has closed down. Maybe it opens the mind, maybe it opens the heart, maybe it opens the body. And so there are many methods to suit many beings for one freedom. So one of the ways that we can put dukkha, getting this, getting rid of that, is stressful. And it's stressful for beings that really seek ease, seek deep. So when we say this is dukkha, maybe we're more. There's no place to rest and relax in this. You know, when you've been inside a small space, maybe you've been inside a car driving to the ocean, then you get out and you stand on the ocean, it's so much more space. So we're coming out of a contracted way of relating, contracted way of living. So anytime there's an appearance in our heart, in our mind, in our body, there's some push and pull that's holding it there. So we have this real, very large spectrum of ways that we can push and pull on our. We can have a very gross version of it, which is, you know, I want that. When the cook serves up something very tasty, and we've got it on our plate already, but we're already thinking about getting some more. And that urge to want more than I even need is dukkha. And so we can turn towards this plate of food and we can say, this is dukkha. And we should take it to the cook and we should say, this is dukkha. And they'll smile and they'll say, yes, it's dukkha. And would you like some more? So we said before, the real source of happiness is never in an object. We said before, the source of a happiness is never in the object. There's no happiness in the factories that make things. Yeah. And of course, the dukkha is also never in the object. Yet no object can ultimately be satisfactory in the. Just because it doesn't last, it's dukkha. Again, from the perspective of lasting, peaceful happiness. And we each have to find our own way of relating to a plate of delicious food. to that we're eating mainly to nourish the body, to fuel the body, to support the heart. So I don't think, using this example of this plate of food, that we want to say I will only eat plain and boring food because, that's all I need. Yeah, a chef, a cook can really enjoy the creation and the making of something very, very beautiful. And we can receive it in that same spirit with a lot of generosity and gratitude. And then we can express how much we enjoy the art and the beauty and the generosity that. And so we would say it's impossible to get lasting happiness from non-lasting objects. Unless you use them in ways that actually generate beautiful happinesses. And so part of this is to be generous, to be grateful. If you have something and you want more of it, getting more of it will not make you happy. It's very likely in that moment you're at peak happiness. I find for myself, usually I'm at somewhere like peak happiness with like a plate of food, while I've still got quite a lot of that plate of food. And it starts to decrease the more I think about getting more of that food and the less that I taste the food that's actually on my plate that I could be enjoying. And so when I find myself greeding for that next plate, it's really helpful just to say, this is dukkha. And if I say it with enough meaning that I understand it, then maybe I stop thinking to do that. Getting more of this is not going to make me more happy. The only way I could get more happy is to give this to someone else so that they can also enjoy it. Okay, maybe it's not the only way, but generosity was actually one of the Buddha's primary ways to create lasting happiness. So the very simple kind of thing about this practice, I think I started off trying to say something else but got caught up in a place. I think we were saying that it can get very, very subtle, the push and the pull. This is actually what I. So that's a very kind of obvious example where the push and the pull is quite obvious. It's about getting more or less of something. And the opposite works. Yeah, if I have something I don't want and I want to get rid of it, then I can be really focused on the getting rid of rather than, just moving through. But actually, it gets subtler and subtler. Just that I'm hearing this sound is also, there's a pulling that into attention. And that pulling in causes a kind of contraction in the awareness, maybe even in the body. You can kind of feel paying attention to something causes contraction. And we have some intention around that object. It's appeared, it has a Vedana, and then I probably developed a plan. For something to appear in perception, there has to be some kind of push-pull. What would it be like if we just drop this way of looking in? Not because it's true, but because it's useful. We don't wait to see what the Vedana is. We don't wait to see if there's greed or aversion in relation. Anything at all that touches any of the sense doors, including thoughts and emotions, and we just say this. So we could say this practice is actually open. rather than dukkha, if dukkha feels too negative. There's a helpful point to bring in that when we're relating to thoughts and emotions that we often feel quite identified with our thoughts and thinking. Each language will kind of say it slightly differently. In English, many times we say, I am thinking, I thought. I read one time that in a translation, I didn't read it in the original Pali, and it said the Buddha was saying, the thought occurred to me. And it suggested to me a way of listening to our thoughts in the way that we might listen to sounds in our environment. It's almost like we have an antenna that can pick up a radio station that's broadcasting the thoughts that occur to us. And maybe this is a ridiculous idea. Maybe there are many different broadcasts happening, just as there are now. We just get out our radio and we tune it into different radio stations. But the main point is these thoughts are occurring to us. We're not making them. If you've ever had a thought of, low self-esteem or that I'm rubbish or negative thoughts that you wish you weren't thinking, embarrassing thoughts that you wish you weren't thinking, which part of this party are you? Are you the one who doesn't want to be thinking this thought, or are you the one who's thinking the thought? Or maybe you're neither of them. But either way, thoughts are occurring, it seems. We mentioned before Rob Bobea, so he calls this a holy disinterest. Things are just occurring. And it certainly kind of means they can be this way, but we're not going to get reactive about them as much. Yeah. Letting be, letting arise, letting remain. And then within that spirit of the things, we can also just say, this. And to be really clear, this is not a rejection, it can stay. It's fine that it's here. It's met with kindness. And what's interesting here is when we say to something, you're unreliable for lasting satisfaction, a certain well-being comes more into the experience. Perhaps because there was this subtle rejection to the experience that was already starting to happen. And so I think that's really interesting that we bring a sense, this is unsatisfactory, and it kind of brings a feeling that's more satisfactory. And the goal of the Buddha's teachings, in a certain way, is supporting us to detach from a happiness which is dependent on getting things in the world. And it kind of introduces us into this realm of relationships, wholesome relationships that fade. And as they do that, they also fade the objects that we could become more. It also fades any problematic sense of ourself. For all of these things are built up in a moment of stress, even when we don't think, oh, this is stressful. So, all of these things, we might not see them as being stressful, but they're all built up in a moment of stress. And so, we'll bring this into a practice tomorrow, but just seeing if this can already be there in the environment, in the space. Maybe just before we end, just to say again, this isn't an argument. This is an invitation to a quite radical way of looking at our experience. And to see if by applying quite a austere sounding way of looking that may sound quite harsh or have a feeling of rejection, it might actually create more kindness, more connection. Okay, let's just have a quiet minute together to close the session. Whatever's here in the tension right now. Seeing this can't bring lasting satisfaction. And just letting go in relationship to that. Thank you again for your generous listening. I wish you well with your practice. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.